A gospel lesson comes from the book of Luke, the 15th chapter, beginning at verse 11. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. And he ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked, 'What's going on?' He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him?' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" Here ends the reading.
Thank you. lobby out here, and you know, everybody was so friendly. It was like the lost daughter came home. Anyway, and look at all of you. What a terrific-looking mix of people. And you're all so well-heeled. I'm going to have to beg pardon for my clothes, but I'm on my way out to the farm. Came into the city last night to do a little talk. I get a lot of these gigs, you know, they call me kind of a grassroots inspirational speaker. I talk to businesses, I talk to some politicians, I talk a lot of different places. Anyway, so I'm in my truck with my dog and we're driving down Elbow Drive. We just come up alongside your truck and my dog, Pilot, he starts barking like he just saw a field goal rabbit. Well, I'll tell you, when Pilot barks, I listen. So I pulled into your parking lot. I looked out the window, and there at the bottom of your sign, I'm seeing worship. Well, I better go into this place, find out what it is these people worship. So here I am. You know, seeing as I'm here, I think maybe I'll give you a few of the tips I passed along last night. You might want to get out your notebooks and a pen just to write a few things down. Okay, I'm a pig farmer, and I've got a lot of farms all over this province. As a matter of fact, I've got so many farms, at one point people started calling me the swine queen. How did I feel about that? I'm laughing all the way to the bank. I learned a while back, oh, a long time ago. As a matter of fact, my daddy taught me this. The farm's been in the business for generations. He says there's a lot of people out there who will pay money to have other people do their dirty work. So here's tip number one. Get your pens ready. If you're willing to get your hands dirty, you can clean up like a bandit. Now, we all know pig farming. This is dirty, smelly work. But on the other hand, I have another hand involved in some other ventures. I'm not really at liberty to tell you about this, but I will say, I make a lot of money, and with money comes power. That's point number two, money equals power. Someone give this young lady over here a piece of paper and a pencil. She needs to know this. With money comes power. So actually, if any of you really want to know, you know, what kind of ventures I'm in, I'm not going to stick around because Pilot gets real impatient if I keep him waiting. But you can always go to my website. It's www.queensfineswine.ca. And if you can't find it, then all you have to do is Google me. Just Google Pig Queen Alberta, and my picture's gonna pop up right there. Okay, so pig farming is dirty business. And I don't have to get my hands in the pig slops too much anymore, because this is what I hire my laborers to do. My laborers, I'll tell you. Oh, that's a headache. Here's something I really believe. I think this was probably my daddy's creed. Your employees, your laborers, are a means to an end. Okay? Write it down. Means to an end. So, we all know feeding swine is not brain surgery. I hire the cheapest laborers I can find. They're kind of desperate, these folks. But you wouldn't believe how many of them are unreliable and lazy. These people would steal me blind if I gave them half a chance. So, I'm telling you, if you're in business, you need to be heavy-handed, okay? Capital letters, underline that one. Heavy-handed in business. A lot of my laborers are foreigners, migrants. You know, they come to the big city because that's where the wealth and the power is, right? Well, a lot of us, we've been here a long time. People like me and you, we've got land, we've got businesses, we've got jobs, we can fend for ourselves. And if things go a little off the rails, we can always find people to help us. These folks, they don't have much in the way of resources and connections. Sure. Some of them come with a little bit of money in their pockets, and you know, in the big city, there's places that money goes, and even if they're able to hang on to their money, there's this important thing, and that is, even though they try really hard, so many of them just don't fit in. You gotta fit in. If you don't fit in, even if your money's there, the pocket runs dry real soon. And when there's no money left, there's no options left. Now, I'm not a great option, but I'll tell you, if you're willing to get your hands in the muck and do the work nobody else is willing to do, you can get a little bit of money out of me. Money, 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 right? Money, the economy, the famines, the world crisis, everybody's worrying about all this stuff. We've got people going all over the world trying to make sure everybody in the world gets fed a four-course dinner. People hear famine, and what they're thinking is calamity. I hear famine, and what I'm thinking is opportunity. I'll tell you, I'm getting top dollar for my pork these days, and there is no shortage of labor. I can get all the people I want to work out on the farm. The downside? These people are hungry. Would you believe I've actually caught them eating the slops they're supposed to be feeding to the swine? That's sad. That's so sad. It eats into my profits. These people think because I have all the food I need, they should have food too. Well, sure, everybody in the world should have lots of food. But it comes at a price. Now, nothing personal. I'm not a hard-hearted woman. But business is business. And I'm talking just good business. What's the matter with you people? You're all sitting there just looking at me. I don't see anyone writing anything down. Okay, you know, I may as well not have bothered, but you know, it was kind of nice meeting you. I'm out of here. Pilot and I, he's getting impatient. We've got to go up to the pet store, get him a few cases of the real nice dog food that he likes. And then we're on our way out to the farm, make sure those people aren't stealing me blind and eating up all my profits.
Of you. You know, you should really rise in the presence of a king. But never mind, never mind. Just stay in your comfy little pews. I'll just increase your taxes by 50% and cut your CP. Sunny days. Murderer, butcher, madman, these are the names you call me. You swore you would never name a child after me. You tell yourselves you would never have done the things I have done. But you know so little about me. I suppose every drama has to have its villain. And in the story of Jesus, I would be it. But I'm here to tell you, there's so much, much more to the story. Back in the day, they called me the great King Herod, Caesar Augustus, Mark Antony, Cleopatra. These were my closest friends. They were my posse. I was appointed king of Judea before I was 30 years of age, and I reigned for 40 glorious years. King of Judea, but I wasn't a Jew, but I knew the Jewish people. I knew what they wanted to hear, and I gave them what they wanted. And it didn't hurt my position when I married the beautiful Miriam, heiress of a Jewish family of incredible power and wealth. But our marriage was far more than one of just convenience. I loved Miriam with all my heart and soul, and she loved me in return. But her family, they did not share that love. From the very beginning, they did not accept me into their family, and they did not show me respect as their king. Low-born foreigner, that's what they called me. I hated them for that. No one treats King Herod with contempt. I would show them. Ah, but my kingdom, my people, they loved and they worshiped me. They thought my reign was the greatest Judea had ever seen. I built some of the wonders of the ancient world, the amphitheater, the hippodrome, the harbor at Caesarea, and wonder of all wonders, the prize of the Jewish people. I rebuilt the Temple of Solomon. And some people even said, Herod is greater than Solomon. Yes, I knew how to please the people of the Jewish people and to keep them in line. But no, they continued to test my authority. So I appointed Miriam's brother as the high priest. One of my most brilliant ideas, until they started to go around me to the high priest. He took my authority and he flaunted it. Little peons went to him as if he were the king. Treason! So he took my authority, so I made the order of execution. You take my authority and I'll take your head. But Miriam, she didn't understand why I had to kill her brother. Her family didn't understand that no one can threaten the authority of the king. I was the king. No other could stand in my way. And Miriam, she grew cold and distant. The nights grew longer and longer. And my days were unbearable. The silent stares. The contempt. The sleeping on the couch. How could any man endure such hate? Never mind the king of Judea. She could not treat me that way. No one could treat the king that way. And she, too, had to die. Any of you, if you were more than common Lutheran peasant stock sitting in the pews, you would have done the same thing if you were king. Ah, the loneliness of being a king. I wanted her back, but I must be a strong king. And then I started to notice a change. The people in my court, my servants, even the soldiers in my personal guard, I could see it in their eyes. It was fear. They were afraid of their king. And then, even my own two sons tried to steal my throne. Ungrateful little urchins. They weren't content to wait for their inheritance. They tried to take it for me. But I discovered their plot, and it was off with their... Well, let's just say that I had to expand the family cemetery. I was Herod the Great, and I alone had held the power of life and death. So you can imagine my surprise when one day these three little astrologers showed up on the steps of my palace, three little wise men, to inquire about the newly born King of the Jews. I am the King of the Jews! But they said, we have seen his star, and we have come to pay him homage, and you're not him. They're coming to ask me for directions to see the King of the Jews. I would have cut their heads off right then and there, but my executioner was off on vacation after all the heads he'd been chopping off. I sent them on their way, and I asked them nicely, when you find this king, could you let me know where he is? Well, I suppose I should have known they wouldn't come back and tell me. I guess my reputation for losing my head or losing the heads of my subjects had gone beyond the borders of Judea. But I was furious. So I issued the order. The order that ultimately gave me those titles that you call me, murderer and butcher. I sent a squad of my soldiers off to that sleepy little town of Bethlehem with the orders to kill any male Jewish child under 2 years of age. That would eliminate any newborn king of the Jews. And you know the rest of the story. By the time my soldiers got there, that virgin mother and the little baby and her woodcraft husband slipped off in the middle of the night. You call me madman, but I was the only one who recognized the threat of that Christ child in Bethlehem. Caesar didn't recognize the threat. The high priest didn't recognize. The people of the world had no idea about this Jesus. But I recognized the threat that this newborn child brought to my kingdom and to me as king. Alas, I went and died shortly after those astrologers showed up. Today you call it cancer. But I was torn asunder inside from the loneliness and the despair and the disease itself. My servants would come, but they would rush off as soon as they fed me the peeled grapes and bathed me. I was all alone. And I began to see that when I died, the great King Herod, well, no one would weep, no one would mourn for me. Well, I would make certain that there would be plenty of mourning and weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so I issued the order for my soldiers to round up Jewish men of high distinction and invite them on over to the Hippodrome for an extended stay. And on the moment of my death, they too would die. And there would be a mourning in Jerusalem like never before. There would be wailing that could be heard in Rome. And everyone would know that the great King Herod was no more.
Oh, wash away.